Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of EOD Gear Improvised. Today, we have a very special guest. We're going to talk about physical security as it relates to computers, laptops, and just your general need for physical security in the digital space. Let's see if you really are protected. So get your pencils out. Get ready to take some notes. We're bringing on Dr. Robert Adams, former United States Navy, retired, and is going to put out some good information. So strap in.
This is EOD Gear Improvised.
EOD Gear Improvised.
Can we get to blow stuff up yet?
Stand by.
Everyone in EOD has a laser-calibrated eyeball and plenty of attitude to go with it.
Seriously, can we blow stuff up now? Fire in the hole.
EOD-gear.com. Initial success or total failure. EOD Gear Improvised. With your host, former Navy EOD tech and owner of EOD Gear, Steve Cassidy.
All right. Dr. Adams, thank you for being here. We go back probably 15 years. Yeah. Go ahead and lose the headphones. Sorry, they're not working. So we go back about 15 years, and we've had some heated discussions and arguments and a lot of tacos and a handful of cigars. So thank you for being here.
Well, welcome to join you.
Oh, man. So I log into my phone every day. It looks at my face, and it hasn't broken because of that. I've used my fingerprint on stuff. And I sit there and go, well, is this really working? So from a physical security standpoint, just to let everybody know, you have multiple patents, 7 patents across different technologies for biometrics. So let's jump into biometrics. What's working? What's not working?
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate that introduction. I think when you look at physical security as a whole, example, when we had our SCIFs in Afghanistan or in Cuba or in the UAE or Pakistan or Iran, we would go in, we'd push a code, and we'd get in, and we'd log into our SIPR or NIPR accounts. And we always thought that the passcode, which most of the time, I'm like you, Steve, I forget my passcode on anything. You have phones like Apple nowadays or Samsung that use facial biometrics. That's the worst thing to use. One, that information is now available for anybody wanting to unlock your phone. You can use that biometrics, facial biometrics, or even a PIN code to access anything that you own now, and so can anyone else.
So what are we using right now? So I use a combination of PIN code or facial code on my cell phone. What's the best route?
Well, that's a good question, Steve, and I appreciate you asking. My 7 patents that I created in the last 4 years, we've had an average of 180 days to get a patent, and they're based off biometrics internally. So your face, everywhere you go, you drive down. On my way over here, I was driving in, and people don't realize those cameras, the CCTV cameras, they're recording your biometrics. They're recording your license plate. In this particular state, they switched over the license plates because the biometrics readers could not read the plates, so they mandatory made a blue background so that they could read those plates. I think the best combination of security is not fingerprints, because anywhere you go, you leave that. I think your face, anywhere you go, you leave that. We developed an internal biometrics that uses vascular, and people say, well, vascular has been around since the 1960s. I say, absolutely. But that's a photocopy of the vascular system, and that's easily fooled. We use what they call multidimensional vascular, which basically means 3-dimension or more, multidimensional. That allows you to see the person and know that the person you're talking to is truthfully Steve Cassidy, because his biometrics in multidimensional match. And if you want to go one level further using ultrasound, like with the Samsung system, you can use an ultrasound chip. You can combine vascular with a fingerprint. And that, now, there's nobody going to fool that because they can't see your internal. They can't see your heartbeat and your blood flow, which we call proof of life if you go by the FBI standard.
So we're gonna do live pulse. It has to be a live pulse.
It proves that biometrics is backed by a live person, yes. And we do heartbeat and blood flow. So when you're checking the biometrics, that vascular network has oxygen inside of it, and that's what actually we're looking at. And we're seeing in a three-dimensional, and if you know the flow rate of Steve Cassidy and his heartbeat, you're able to identify this is Steve Cassidy's 3D vascular or multidimensional vascular with his fingerprint. And you don't need to have fingerprint. You could do bone surface, like the surface of the moon. That's another one of our patents.
So hit bone surface a little bit, because I know we've discussed this a lot, but how unique the bone scan is compared to fingerprinting.
Well, fingerprinting, since about 2015, the FBI has come out and said that it's not 100% match anymore. They can't testify in a court of law that this is absolutely Steve Cassidy's fingerprints. We're seeing a duplication of the fingerprints. Like with any genetic mutations, you're going to get repetition. You're going to get people that are going to start looking like Steve Cassidy, God forbid. Or
my brother's a dead ringer.
I've met your brother, and he's not a dead ringer. So maybe in the bedroom, that's not my personal opinion.
No, let's not get too weird.
I think that bone surface, we hit upon why isn't anybody using the bone surface? We actually found one reference to bone surface using X-ray. And we said to ourselves, well, why are we doing that? Why aren't we doing that was the question. Not why are we doing that, but why aren't we? And if you look at the moon and you're looking at the picture that's rendered on your television and you see all the dips, the dots, imagine connecting all that up and saying, okay, this is Steve Cassidy's surface of his bone. And what we did was we said to ourselves, well, what happens if you lose your finger? Let's say any living body part. So let's say you're walking through the airport. And we have a camera that could identify you without your face. And we know that if you're dark skin or black, you're going to get dinged. And the camera is going to say, oh, this is you. And in reality, it's not even you. And you're 10,000 miles away. It happens because a camera can't pick up that coloration and that depth of color. And that's just the camera. There's no camera that's going to ever be able to achieve that. So why not have something that's a camera that you can't see that's picking up your bone surface? So let's say on your cheek, your forehead, your body, whole body, if you wanted to. It doesn't matter. Whatever you register, that can be your vascular as well as your bone surface.
So for amputees, the nubs could be used?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, we had Brandon, he was our head of marketing when we first started the company. And he said, well, what happens if you lose your fingers? And we changed the patent at the time, and we said, well, let's take out phalange or finger. What do we put? We said, any living body part. And that's where we came up with that idea to utilize either bone surface or vascular, multidimensional, separately or together. There's several patents, and we have another 12 more that will be coming out this year or next year. I get bored, I write patents. And it allows us to identify a person with absolute certainty. And that's the whole goal, because when I was in Afghanistan, we had one of my aides, I can't remember his name, but he was selling CAC cards. He was selling facial biometrics, because we switched at the embassy where I worked as the DCO, we switched to a facial biometric system. Problem is, most people cover up their faces when you're walking around base. You're walking around, the cameras can't pick you up. But they can tell you by gait recognition. We had one guy that was really good at that and impressed even me. And I said, well, what about another way that we could do this? And that's where we came up with the idea of using biometrics internal to the human being that nobody can copy. Our system will scan you. You don't know what it's going to ask for first. You can't front load it artificially. It'll scan your bone first this time. Maybe it might scan your bone the fifth time. Heartbeat, blood flow, bone surface, vascular.
3D vascular.
3D, multidimensional. We don't call it 3D or 4D because we said originally when we wrote the original provisional patent, we called it 3D. We changed it to multidimensional. And with that, we said, well, let's call it multidimensional and multimodal. Multimodal means where you combine two modalities of biometrics. So basically, if you're a Chase credit card company, their biggest thing is that they have credit cards and they lose $1 billion a year, I think the number was. Well, they don't want security. Apple doesn't want security. Samsung doesn't want security. Why? It's a write-off to them. The banks, it's a write-off against their profits. Why do they want to have 100 million or a billion of that number, the whole amount, not fraud? Because if it's not fraud, they have nothing to write off. Apple's the same way. I know several people within Apple who said, your security is not meant for a phone. We design a phone that's easy to open. We're not caring about security because we want that data. Our vendors want that data. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, I can't comment on that is what they said. I'm like, so you're selling the data. I can't comment on that. But they want something that's easily unlocked. And people think that your Apple phone's secure. That data sold before it's the end of the month. Your information is distributed. Your biometrics facial is distributed around the world to all the company, all the countries that do business with the U.S. There's a thing called the Real ID Act that the U.S. government wanted to switch everybody over to. It has nothing to do with the driver's license. It has to do with capturing your facial biometrics so they can match it against your phones.
Yeah, they had that in place. They were talking about for us to do travel within the United States, we would have had to have a Real ID. But I think that got squashed a little bit.
That got put back. It didn't get squashed. People were very much rushed to try to get that driver's license with the biometrics. They wanted to know where you live, what you're doing, and your bank accounts, and so they can match that against your biometrics. If you know your customer, the banks require a biometrics facial input now whenever you open a new account. And they're doing this to what? I don't have a clue. But you sell that information with Five Eyes, the nations like New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the UK, they're all using our facial biometrics that we supplied them, and we get their facial biometrics. Now, if I'm a U.S. citizen looking at the Constitution, I'd say that's highly illegal. But, you know, I haven't ran for Senate yet. I'm thinking about it.
Certainly, I don't really wish for everybody to have biometric data on myself. I'm sure most people are in that camp.
Well, that's true, but that's why we came up with our biometrics, that our biometrics example, TRW credential services for your credit card. We saw a lot of these breaches. Well, why are the credit card companies being breached? Why are Marriott and Group Sheraton being breached? Why is Office Personal Management being breached? Well, it's being allowed to be breached because that information is then being sold and correlated against your facial biometrics and your fingerprint biometrics. What we came up with was you can't unlock your database file with, say, TRW unless Steve Cassidy goes on, verifies his vascular and bone surface, what we call multimodal, not multidimensional. It's multidimensional in effect. Once you verify that, that file could be unlocked. So if you have 360 million credential credit files, if you locked them, TRW can't have a breach. And if they had a breach, they can't be used because each file is locked with the individual biometrics. You own that credit file. You own that biometrics. You should be able to lock it, but they don't want to because that data is being sold. It's all about money.
It's revenue.
Yeah, it's revenue.
Okay. So where do you see the industry going from here? I know you have your company, Global Identity, and so you're working with companies around the world.
We are. We're working with countries as well. We just closed a health biometrics contract where we're supplying our patents, two patents, in license to a particular country to help them end COVID. But part of that is when you go through an airport, you always see these temperature checks. And I said to myself, well, why don't we have a health biometrics with identity verification in one scan, multiple sensors? So we came up with that. We've got two patents in that arena. One particularly to detect COVID, which is done by a sensory called chemosensory smell. So you're able to detect the smell caused by the infection. It's just like a dog looking for cocaine or money. If you teach the dog to look for that particular scent, in this case, the scent's caused by the infection of COVID, you're able to say that person at stage 1 day, 24 hours within being infected, we're able to identify you're infected, whereas a PCR test takes the third or the fourth day, 72 hours or more, before the PCR test will show positive. So by then, you've already been spreading it for 3 days.
Correct.
And that's why we came out with that idea. One particular country just signed a $188 million licensing contract with us per year for two patents. And we're starting to see where these countries are becoming proactive instead of reactive. So when you get sick, you react and you take medicine. Why not be proactive and start looking for these spreaders of diseases as they travel through airports and catch those process or problems when you're checking for identity? So if you automate the identity process as you travel and you check for health, that's what those two patents do.
And not just travel, but workplace.
Workplace, schools, trains, embassies. We started working with the UK government on that. They put out a bid. Unfortunately, they gave it to Fujitsu. That's fine. Fujitsu can only do two-dimensional. The old vascular biometrics, as we call it, is stereoscopic, like looking at it with your eyes. It's two cameras, basically. That's not multidimensional. It's secure. It's more secure than a fingerprint or facial. But when you do multidimensional 3D or 4D or 5D vascular, you're able to not just look at biometrics for identity, you're looking at the health. And it can be done in a blink. That's how fast it is. And to me, if I know a room of people that are all who they say they are and they're healthy, then that's just like a plane and you're not spreading these diseases. What if we could stop the spread before it starts? We would have never had COVID spreading like it did.
Right. It would identify it quicker.
Well, within 24 hours of infection. Less, we're actually at 12 hours now. It's an electronic nose, basically, in a sense, where it's smelling for the infection caused and by the disease, by the spread of the disease. And we're able to detect cancer now. We're able to detect 26 different diseases simply by smell, simply by looking at the vascular and saying, hey, here's what we're seeing. Here's a combination. Chat GP that they have out, that's an artificial intelligence. Basically, what we did is we built our own AI engine. And we said, hey, go look for these. And it's similar to a brain in the sense that it has a one-track mind. It's only looking for these markers. And when it finds those markers, it knows 100% positive that I see this in the vascular and I smell this. You have diabetes. Boom. You don't need a blood test. We're able to say you're pregnant or whatever disease.
So years ago, I was discussing kind of this topic with a gentleman in MBA, Kellogg School of Business, and he was at a trade show in Germany, and they had a guy who could detect lung cancer, pre-detect it, but nobody was talking to him because the insurance companies didn't want anybody to pre-detect it because the care and the cost would have been significantly longer. And so they don't want to pre-detect lung cancer because you're not going to live, chances are. I mean, the numbers aren't great. So how does that fit in now with the economy in pre-detecting diseases? Now, COVID, I understand, because that can be obviously bad, but it can also be short-term as opposed to a cancer. And I think you can probably speak as an expert on that.
Well, it's a good question. And I would say that when you look at cancer and you look at the diseases, why would an insurance company or a medical profession want to eliminate its business model? Well, they don't. They're in business to, if all these things are out there, have been treated and caught, then you've just eliminated their business model. They have a business model to treat these, and they want to keep the customer hooked for as long as they can. My father died of lung cancer. He was a 3-pack-a-day smoker. And, you know, I look back and I say to myself, can we prevent this? Can we be proactive? I spoke about this at Nottingham at my TED Talk. Instead of being reactive, they call it Mibio. Mibio means, it's a Japanese term, and I went out to Japan. I don't know why. And our CFO took me out there, and he didn't tell me why the meeting was. And I listened to these people. They wanted me to detect medical issues while we're scanning for identity. And I said, well, we're not here. We don't know anything about that. I didn't have a clue. And they could barely speak English, and I could barely understand them. But, you know, going back to that train from Yokohama to Tokyo, I figured out that they could scan the identity and look at the flesh and blood that we are ignoring, because we're going right through that. Why can't we look at that for telltale or tells, just like at a poker game, you're looking for the tells or the signs of certain things. Well, how do we figure out what those certain parameters are? Well, we go back and we look at the medical journals for the last 100 years. Okay, how do we do that really good? We use an AI to go back and look at that. And then we say, okay, you've identified 5 diseases. Now let's go look for those when we're scanning people and testing them. Will it work? Sure enough, it did. You have cancer. Well, how did you know I have cancer? I haven't told anybody. Well, the system says you have cancer. System says you have this type of cancer. And when we looked at that, we said, okay, let's take this broader. Let's continue looking for those tells in all the medical journals, in all the medical history of the former patients, and teach the AI just like a child. And now I think we're, like I said, we're at 26. I think we're well over 50, actually. We've doubled that in the last 2 years. So instead of being reactive, let's be proactive. Mibio means you're between, Steve, you understand this. You know you're coming down with something. You kind of feel blah. And they say you're coming down with something. That's called Mibio. It's between healthy and sick. And that process, if we can detect what's causing that, based on the symptoms, we know what you're coming down with before you have it, because we've just ignored that. We just write it off to, I'm not feeling well today. Well, gotcha. What the computer knows what's wrong with you. We just haven't been using that. You talk about the breath test. They use a mechanical sensor, and that was what they were doing. They're using organic sensors now. We're actually using a 3D printed sensor now that's even better than the organic sensor. It keeps costs down, and you don't need a CMUT, which is a very expensive design. I've spent quite a number of years and over $3 million of our investment to develop our own CMUT when we don't even need it. We could just 3D print it for a smell sensor. And we actually found a company in Germany that was able to tune your sensor in to look for specific cancers. Imagine your phone that you carry around with you every day and you count the steps. You watch pictures, you watch video on it. Imagine that phone telling you, hey, Steve Cassidy, you're coming down with cancer. You're at stage 0. You match all the tell signs. Would you take action on that, Steve?
Yeah, probably would.
Proactive identity biometrics, or proactive health biometrics is what we call it. if your child has their phone with them all day and they're on it all day and it's actually smelling them, it's reading them. My favorite is if you go to the grocery store and you want to buy fruit, you want to check the fruit. We all have our own methodologies that we were taught. What if you're able to tell just by putting your phone up there and set the phone on the app and say, I want this sweetness, and it checks for the parameters that you want because you found a fruit you like and you put it up to the lemon or the orange or the grapefruit, and it tells you, yeah, this is the one you want because it matched your parameters.
That'd be outstanding.
I think so.
I'd use that on ribeyes.
I don't think it'll do good on ribeyes.
It's my fantasy. Come on.
You'd have to learn how to cook first.
Oh, here we go. Anywho, so going forward now, we have this technology available. Now, bringing it out to market, you know, and I know you with Global Identity, where's the next step? When are we going to start? Is this SCIF level? Is this agency level? I mean, obviously, this doesn't roll out to the masses yet, but it is going to roll out to critical infrastructure, let's say.
Yeah, I think we'll start seeing it at airports. What we're seeing right now is the fingerprint network is on the downward spiral. I've talked with four or five major fingerprint companies across the globe. China's obviously pushing hard, and most of that product is made in China or Taiwan. There's a downward spiral to that because they're going over to facial. They all want to capture your face, the government's. We had this in Afghanistan with mobile money that I ran, and they all want your facial data biometrics because they want to track you. They want their taxes. But what they're seeing, just like Apple and Samsung and all these other companies, is that it's not necessarily accurate. When you open a can of coffee and it's ground already, and I did this morning, I was just making some coffee, I can't see in the can because it's so black. There's no light. Now, there's just enough light for me able to see. I get a scoop and put three scoops in my espresso. But that's the same way a camera looks at when you have very dark skin. It's not there to identify because of the pigmentation. That's facial biometrics, and it doesn't work. The accuracy of facial biometrics if you is laughable, especially NIST, which is our federal government's identity biometric system. Every year within the last 5 years, You'll get a press release or I've gotten better scores on my NIST. Well, you know, for 5 years I've been watching this and still they're not accurate. I can show anybody how to fool the biometrics on facial. It's senselessly simple. But when you look at internal biometrics that you can't see and you can't front load, you don't know what to put in what order. Our system randomly decides what it asks for and it doesn't give you time to go look for it and put that up there. It's just going to scan your hand or your body or your arm or your forehead or your cheek, whatever you've registered, and it's going to do a sequence. And if that's not already loaded, it's going to say this is not the person because we expected people to try to front load it. We expected the problems that would be occurring. I think we're going to see a fallout with the facial recognition because most of the facial recognition like Clearview AI and Paladrine, which is Peter Thiel's company, they stole most of that facial. They scraped it from LinkedIn, from Facebook, and they did so illegally. And they're continuing to do so. Dr. Tan, I've talked to many times. I've talked to his senior vice president of international sales many times. I'm on a one-to-one basis with him. They think that they're going to continue because the U.S. government's backing them. I think the U.S. government's going to finally put their foot down and say, no more scraping. You can't use these facial biometrics like we saw in Illinois and saw in Chicago area. And the police department's constantly picking up facial biometrics on their body cameras. You own your biometrics. They can't legally take that from you. But they have. And I think the U.S. government's going to put privacy laws in place, which is going to push it to internal biometrics that you have to give your consent to provide to a company. And that's what the area we're at. When you register at an airport, that's what we're going to see.
Okay. Awesome. So if somebody's listening to this and they're interested in what you have, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, if they're serious about upgrading their systems, go through our website, globalidentity.com.
If you need to buy it on GSA, you got a guy.
Well, Steve, I've been working with you since, and you know, I can't believe you've had your business 10 years, and I've watched you grow phenomenally, and we didn't want to go with anybody else but you when we decided to go with GSA, and I came to you and I said, hey, I'd like to get my product. If you're a government buyer, if you're a city, if you're a county, and you want secure biometrics for your employees, you want to know that that's the person, and you want to also scan for health, our sensors can do it, and they can go through your company.
Okay. That really wasn't my push, but hey, I appreciate it.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, you've been a good friend for the last
15 years. I know, scary to think.
It's been a long time. Been that long?
Yeah, they get asked. It's gone quick, though. Well, so last word. We'll wrap it up here. We're a little over 30 minutes. And, you know, what would you like to say?
Biometrics are the future, but you've got to stand up if people steal your facial and your fingerprints. You can't allow that to happen.
All right. We're good? All right, everybody. I appreciate you tuning in. If you have any questions, just pop it over to us.
EOD Gear Improvised.
EOD Gear Improvised.
Steve Cassidy, a former Navy EOD tech and owner of EOD Gear Initial Success or Total Failure. Two locations, one in Franklin and one in Huntsville. The website is eod-gear.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Twitter. EOD Gear has customers from around the globe. Until next time, this is EOD Gear Improvised.
Signing off.